Am I on? Let me see.
George.
Hi there.
George, hey. This is a week that we have been waiting for. Did you ever think it was going to come?
Yes, I really have thought it would come for a long time, but I had no idea how long it would take. I mean, I always thought even back 4 or 5 years ago that he was going to do something unimaginable that would bring him down. And it turns out he did lots of things that would do that. And I mean, we're finally seeing the consequences of that.
Unimaginable, but you
but unimaginable for anybody but this guy. I mean, it's just incredible.
So let me back up
Let's
before
go back,
we get
yeah.
too carried away here and introduce myself. I'm Ruth Marcus. So I'm a columnist and associate editor at the Washington Post, and I am delighted to be reunited with one of my favorite
editor extraordinaire.
And I'm going to let my favorite person introduce himself, Mr. Conway.
Oh, I'm George. I cause trouble. Occasionally I write stuff and occasionally Ruth edits it. I don't know what else to say about myself.
George is, and I will speak for him since he's not going to toot his own horn, one hell of a lawyer, one hell of a writer, one hell of a political commentator who has seen Donald Trump up close and personal, and like me, has been awaiting this indictment, which is really the big enchilada.
It really is.
George, talk for a minute about how big a deal this is, because we've seen other Trump indictments, more are to come. Why is this indictment different from all the other indictments?
We've had bad presidents. We've had lots and lots of corrupt politicians throughout American history, but none have ever tried to overturn American democracy. And the question is, the system wasn't prepared for that, in the sense that it was something that we as Americans, having become so accustomed to a working democracy, a working republic, could not conceive of, that a president of the United States would attempt to maintain power despite having lost an election. And to the point where we weren't even sure, like, I mean, how do you deal with this? What mechanism do you have to deal with this? I mean, there was impeachment, but he was unsuccessful in his coup, so he was leaving office anyway. And so impeachment, you know, the only function of impeachment could have been, if the Republicans had exercised some courage and foresightedness, if Mitch McConnell hadn't thought that, you know, Trump will just go away, they could have, under the Constitution, under the impeachment clause, stripped him of the ability to hold future public office. But they made the mistake, of course, of not doing that. And so there needs to be some other mechanism to protect the democracy. And there needs to be some kind of accountability for what, you know, has to be in some way a criminal act, the criminal act of trying to defraud the nation of a peaceful transition of power. I mean, you could steal $1 billion from the Treasury and you'd go to jail. You could steal $100,000 and go to jail. But if you try to steal America's democracy, you try to steal the presidency, I mean, how could there not be a criminal sanction for that? And that's where this indictment comes in.
So no one has written and argued more persuasively than you have about what a malignant narcissist Donald Trump
right.
is. And
right.
so he, maybe to this day, and you know him way better than I do and have seen him way more up close and personal than I have, but if he believes in his narcissistic way that the election was stolen from him, if he can, if, and the burden is on prosecutors to prove that he knew that he lost the election, how big a hurdle is that for this prosecution? Because you're talking about false statements, and you and I know that Donald Trump lives in a universe of his own imagining. So how big a problem is that?
Look, I mean, it's not a big problem, and it's for this reason. One is, he deep down knows that what he's saying is false. I mean, he doesn't, in his mind, he doesn't care about whether something is true and false or false. His mind is a jumble of true things, false things, things he just wants to say, things, impulses, and so on and so forth. He doesn't, the difference between him and us is that when we say things that are false, we feel guilty. And we feel shame when somebody points out to us that we've said something that's false, even inadvertently false. I mean, that's why nothing must have bothered, nothing bothered you more as an editor at the Washington Post than having to issue even a little correction.
You betcha.
You pull your hair out. You care about that. Donald Trump, because he is a malignant narcissist, does not care. And it's illustrated very well in the record of the January 6th hearings and in this indictment by the various things that he said to people, like, just say the election was stolen and leave the rest to me and the Republican Congress, right? That's just basically saying it doesn't matter what's true or false. We're just going to say it is. Just let us deal with it. Just say it. And then he said there's another line in this indictment, which is absolutely stunning, where Trump, is trying to persuade Mike Pence to reject the electoral votes of the various states that are contested. And Pence says, I can't do that. And Trump says,
ultimate Trump insult, right?
He knows what he's saying, what he's attempting to do is false and untrue. He does not care. He does give the effect of he does appear delusional in a sense, because he does insist on things that are not true, even in the face of, of contrary evidence. But deep down, he knows the difference between right and wrong. And he knows that not everything he says is true. He just doesn't care. And that, to me, that's why he can be shown to have criminal intent. And it's also why, for example, an insanity defense, which actually might be his best defense, because he does give the appearance of being completely out of his mind, wouldn't work, because he actually does know the difference between right and wrong, as illustrated in the documents case, where, I mean, if you didn't realize that we were keeping the documents was wrong and hiding them from the government was wrong, well, why would you get somebody to try to destroy the videotapes of Walt Nauta moving those documents around? Well, that's because he knows it's bad. He knows that what he had done is wrong, and he needed to cover it up. So he does have the capacity to understand the difference between truth and lies and between right and wrong. He just doesn't care. And that's the nature of his sociopathy, his psychopathy, his malignant narcissism.
Yeah, absolutely. So imagine the unimaginable, which is you are Donald Trump's lawyer.
Sorry about opening my Diet Coke there.
So George, imagine the unimaginable, which is that you are Donald Trump's lawyer. In addition to getting him to pay you a big fat retainer up front, because we know how bad he is about his legal bills.
Yeah, we know he'll, and then he would fire me within a couple of weeks.
Well,
or maybe a couple hours.
He cycles minutes through them. But while you're still his imaginary lawyer in my hypothetical, and don't fight the hypothetical, as the justices say.
Okay, I won't fight the hypothetical.
What is the best way for his lawyers to defend him? What advice are you giving him?
I mean, the only two things that they can do, I mean, I would tell him that he needs to own up to it and plead guilty and work out a deal with the government, basically by saying, one of the things that the Justice Department will consider doing in settling, in plea bargaining political corruption cases, is to take a commitment from the defendant, an enforceable commitment from the defendant, not to hold public office again, to resign, like Agnew had to resign as part of his nolo contendere plea in 1973. And so what I would say is you need to work out the best deal possible, and you just have to say you're just going to leave public life and pay a fine, and I'd try do my best to keep him out of prison.
Plus or
he's never going to agree with that.
Yeah, but I was going to say plus or minus zero. What are the chances of that?
He would never do it. But I mean, the only hint that he might possibly do it came where, he did at one point somehow, I think it was reported that he approached the Justice Department through an intermediary, approached Garland, I think, through an intermediary, it was reported, to say that can't we just work this out? And at that point, and this was, I think this was had to do with the documents. Maybe at that moment he was thinking something like that. But the problem is he digs himself so deep, he just refuses. He's one of his problems is he's incapable of admitting error. I mean, you think the most, the silliest example, of course, was the Sharpie on the weather map. Mm-hmm. If you remember that, where the famous
Sharpie. He
modified a weather map with a Sharpie in order to pretend that he was right in saying that a hurricane had a chance of hitting Alabama. He can't admit error. And that's why he digs himself deeper and deeper into a hole. And he's not going to do it. He's not going to plead. But that would be his best move, would be, I'll leave the Republic alone and you leave me alone.
Well,
but he's not going to do that.
I have a couple questions on that. One is whether in a situation like this, where Jack Smith works for an administration whose president is running for re-election, is running against Donald Trump, where Donald Trump is the likely GOP nominee, would it be even proper for Jack Smith to make it a condition of the never going to happen plea agreement with Donald Trump that he would retire from public life? Because I have to say that makes me a little queasy.
That's understandably so. But we are in uncharted territory. I actually think it would be the best resolution for the country. It's never going to happen. And the problem with it is, of course, is that even the suggestion of it, if it came from the Justice Department, would be pointed to by Trump and his supporters as, aha, this is why you're doing that. And in a sense, they're not wrong, because one of the reasons why we have to do this, we have to make sure we enforce the law, is that so that somebody can't do this again. I mean, it is actually an important function of the criminal law, not just to deter people, but to basically prevent them from committing further crimes. And if you want to commit this, if you want to prevent this guy from committing further crimes of the sort that he has committed in the past, you have to keep him from holding any form of political power again.
I'm tempted and so to that's say a,
that
lock
is actually. Well, I'm writing an op-ed, as you may know, and I'm going to try to sell the title "Lock Them Up."
Oh well, there you go. You can use me, as your advocate.
All right. I'm going to say, I'll tell the editors that Ruth suggested.
Yeah, I see. You see how far that gets
on you. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a legitimate concern. I mean, just as I think, I was never a prosecutor, but I believe, as I mentioned just a few moments ago, that it is a legitimate consideration of the Justice Department to take a corrupt politician who's being prosecuted out of public life. And I think that's something that's actually in DOJ guidelines, that it is something that, is a consideration in public corruption cases. The problem is, it is, as you correctly point out, it would create a lot of political ammunition for Trump and the Republicans if the Justice Department ever breathed the word of this. I mean, it would have to be basically Trump throwing himself at the feet of the Justice Department and admitting his wrong, admitting he did wrong, and he will never, ever, ever do that, because he's just not capable of that.
So back in this universe, is this case
in the universe?
Is this case going to trial? Is it going to trial before the election? And do you think that it would be wise for Trump to testify or not? Because I've been talking to some criminal defense lawyers and ex-prosecutors about this today.
I'm gonna answer the last question first. There is no way that any competent defense lawyer would allow Trump to testify. And that's because he's incapable of it. I mean, think of what the cross-examination would be like. I mean, you ask Trump, are people lying about you? Yes. Does everyone lie about you? Well, no. But does everybody, all your political enemies lie about you? You didn't do this. You didn't do that. You could just go on and on and get him to say absurd things just by getting him to say, by drawing him out on his untruths and about how, everyone is pointing to him as a crook. And you saw a little, we saw a little about that, of that when Robbie Kaplan, mm-hmm. Dean Carroll's lawyer, took Trump's deposition in the rape and defamation case that Carroll won. And you know, this is crazy stuff will come out of his mouth. He would not last 5 minutes on cross-examination with a good lawyer cross-examining him. And that was the conclusion reached by Jim Dowd, as you recall. I mean, if you recall in Bob Woodward's, mm-hmm. I think, first book on the Trump era, there was, you know, basically this entire monologue or something that clearly came out of Dowd's mouth to Woodward, where Dowd is describing the mock cross-examinations that he conducted of Trump, you know, in advance of a possible interview with Bob Mueller. And, you know, they started asking him questions, and basically Trump just went off the rails and started saying crazy things. And at the end of basically his advice to Trump was, as a result of that experience, was you cannot testify. We cannot allow you to testify. It would be a disaster. And then at the end of the book, you know, he says, there's like the voice in Dowd's head says, Trump is just a effing liar. And that's how the book ends. And that's just, he would make Captain Queeg look like a good witness. So he will not be allowed to testify. No one will allow him to testify. I would love to see him testify because I think it would be the ultimate courtroom spectacle of all time. From now for, you know, if the universe lasts 20 billion more years, nothing will ever top it, but it's not going to happen. Now, your other questions were, to go back, your other questions were, what were they?
Is this case going to trial, and is it going to trial before the election?
It is going to trial. It's going to trial, and I think it can and should go to trial before the election. And I think that was the object, that is the object of Jack Smith in charging Trump alone. The more criminal defendants you put into one indictment, the more complicated a case becomes exponentially, because every defendant will make his own pretrial motions or her pretrial motions and motions for severance. You just get more and more things to deal with the more defendants that you have. And then at trial, the trial becomes messier because every witness has to be cross-examined by each defense counsel's lawyer, each defendant's lawyer. And, you know, everybody's hopping up and down, and it's much, much more chaotic, and it's much more harder for the jury. They got to keep track of who said what to whom, and how it affects each individual defendant. Whereas in this case is purposely streamlined, I think, so that he can get Trump to trial sooner rather than later. I think the alternative approach would have been like the approach that people say that Fannie Willis, the Fulton County District Attorney, is going to take, which is charge this like a mafia case where you basically charge 10 defendants at once, including the boss and the consigliere and some of the associates and so on and so forth, and the maid guys or whatever. You know, that's a much more complicated kind of litigation to try, whereas all they're doing here is they're just following him along in this indictment and showing you he did this, he was told this, he then said that, he did this, he was told this, he did that. And it's just basically a one timeline on one human being. It's much less complicated a case. And if you have an experienced judge who understands the need, the public interest here, which I think the public interest really, really speaks in favor of getting this case tried before the election, so that, you know, the American people can see the result, and so that we don't have this hanging over, casting a shadow over the election. I think an experienced judge like this judge, who was a judge,
Tanya Chutkan.
Judge Chutkan is an experienced and well-regarded trial lawyer. She was a public defender here in the District of Columbia for many, many years, and you know she knows all the defense bar tricks by. Necessarily. So she knows what they're going to try to do, and she knows how judges can effectively deal with them. I mean, there's nothing better. I mean, she's as good a choice, I think, for this case as anyone could imagine. And also she's a
the wheel landed on a good judge.
Yeah, for once.
I agree with you. So we have a impending, looming, split screen, amazing, could not make this up if you were writing the script for it, moment coming next year where Trump is simultaneously criminal defendant in multiple venues and leading candidate for the Republican nomination and then potentially the presidency. Talk for a bit about the politics of this in the, as you see it, and particularly in the Republican Party. Does this just cause his base and his allies and even his opponents to rally around him, or does it finally shake things? I mean, I know we're all kind of imagining things that never actually happen when we think, okay, this will be the straw that breaks Trump's back. Does this finally shake things up and give people pause about reelecting this man?
Well, I think it's giving a lot of people pause about reelecting this man, but not enough people to deny him the nomination. I've been saying for quite some time that I think he's going to get the nomination no matter what, because I don't think there is anyone out there who can beat him. And I think that the Republican base is basically suffused with this disinformation and wants to be. Outlets like Fox News and all of these politicians, like, you know, from Marco Rubio to Kevin McCarthy to Ted Cruz to all of these politicians who are talking about the weaponization of politics, they are basically saying that because they don't want the wrath of the Republican base when it's told things that it doesn't want to hear. I mean, that's basically the mentality. They just don't want to hear reality. And that's, you know, that's how Fox News got to ended up paying $750 million to Dominion. It's why you see, you know, Kevin McCarthy, who was caught on tape saying, "I've had it with Trump." And he was saying on the floor of the House that it was Trump was responsible for the terrible events of January 6th. Now saying, you know, the process that the criminal justice system is being weaponized. They just can't let go of this. And they fed the beast for so long that they can't stop feeding it. And so it's like a train wreck. It's just basically like Pelham 1-2-3. It's running down the line, and it's going to hit something sooner or later.
Well, I'm thinking about the potential train analogies, and none of them are going to exactly work. But where does this end up? And does this, I'll just keep going here, does this derail Trump, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, he gets the nomination. He will be, I think he will be the first convicted felon. I've felt this for like months now. He will be the first convicted felon to be a major party nominee. And he will be, you know, his conviction, a conviction or more than one conviction will be on appeal while the election is pending. The fall campaign is pending.
And does this indictment and do those impending, you know, from your mouth convictions make it more likely or less likely, or how do they affect his ability to end up back in the White House?
Well, I think obviously it hurts him among the broad electorate. The only way I see him winning the general election is if there is a third party candidate of a certain stripe that splits the vote, the anti-Trump vote. That has the potential, I think, to destroy the Republic. And I think the people who are concerned about the no labels movement are right to be concerned about the no labels movement. Hold on for a second. Hi. What?
You ready?
Oh, gosh, I got to go. I have to go to makeup now.
All right.
I'm sorry.
George, we don't want to.
We've been talking for longer than I thought.
We don't want to keep you from your hit, George, but you've given us a lot to think about. George Conway, it is always so much fun to talk to you. And
thank you. I'm sorry we got cut off here.
No problem.
I shouldn't say that, right?
Thanks to everybody for listening. Please let us know what you thought of the conversation. And don't forget to go to the Washington Post site. I believe that's WashingtonPost.com for continued updates and analysis on the indictment, including some from yours truly. And please stay tuned for more Covington Post Opinions audio team. Thanks so much, George. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.